Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for the week of August 27th through September 3rd. I'm here again this week with Father Jim McDermott. Welcome, Father Jim.
Thank you, Tim. You know, Tim, I love the music that you put underneath this. I feel, though, there should be like a part where it goes like, Tim Reading.
We'll get that. Don't worry. We'll add that later.
We're in the early stages. All right.
Right, right. We're just experimenting at this point. Well, we had some fun last week talking about spam and other issues, so we thought we'd talk again this week about current events. So what's been in the news recently?
Current events. One big current event has been the recent death of Cardinal Jean-Marie Lustiger in France.
Yes, Cardinal Lustiger was the Archbishop of Paris for 25 years.
Archbishop for 25 years. He was also born Jewish.
Yes, was baptized Catholic, but was born Jewish. His mother died in Auschwitz, and this formed his identity for his entire life.
Yeah, I think, it was sort of a real challenge for people, probably at times, especially his fellow Jews, in that sense of he insisted that he was Jewish as well as Christian, and that, you know, it raised tensions, and it also, I think, it was a means of talking about the relationships between Jews and Christians.
Yes, and at his funeral, at his request, there was a Jewish mourning prayer was said, and there was soil brought from the Holy Land and placed on his coffin.
I did not know that.
Yes, yes, very interesting. And, I mean, he was a somewhat controversial figure in the French Church, in that historically the French Church was very independent and had an identity separate from the Roman Church. Mm-hmm. And he had a very close relationship with John Paul and had strong ties to Rome. So there was some controversy in Paris during his tenure there, but as displayed by his funeral, thousands of people showed up to mourn his death.
Now, I've been meaning to ask you, I haven't seen you since, how was the funeral?
Unfortunately, America did not send me to the funeral. I would have liked to have
come on, Christensen, get with it. Get this guy to France.
Right, right. I volunteered, but now, the other big news in recent weeks was the resignation of Karl Rove.
That's right. Another, I mean, a big shock.
Yes, I think a lot of people were surprised by that.
Yeah, I mean, given the stuff he'd seemed to already have navigated, especially the 2006 election, I'm not sure that anyone expected he would resign now.
Yeah, I guess it came out that he had sort of broached the topic last summer that he wanted to resign, but they wanted to have him stay on through the 2006 elections. And in some ways, he might have been better off leaving earlier because that was a big disaster for the Republicans.
Yeah, better off maybe a winning record, so to speak, if he had left
right.
then.
Left after hitting the big home run in 2004 and just ended it there. You know, he's left definitely a mixed legacy. He's a polarizing figure. You know,
oh, my gosh.
No doubt.
Yeah, it's great. Neil Gabler, he's with the LA Times.
Right.
He has a great term for Rove, actually, that I really love. It's called a Rovism.
Rovism, okay.
A Rovism. A Rovism is a statement that is true because you say it is.
Okay.
The underlying sort of principle is reality is whatever you say it is.
It's sort of like truthiness, the Stephen Colbert
exactly.
Term.
It's sort of a kissing cousin, really, of truthiness. And so, for example, just to set it up, so when Bush was elected in 2000, you know, very controversial election, he said, "I will be a uniter, not a divider."
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's a blast from the past.
Yeah, it is a blast from the past. Or John Kerry is not a war hero.
Right. I mean, there was all sorts of evidence otherwise, suggesting otherwise, yet a lot of people really believe that he was not.
And if you just say it, it can be true. It's right. Kind of like magic. One of my favorites is that there is no such thing as global warming.
Yeah. And there's still people who hold on to that, despite a lot of evidence to the contrary.
Absolutely. A Rovism. And I actually thought of a good church Rovism.
Oh, interesting. What do you have?
How about the church never changes?
The church never changes.
Never changes. Vatican II? Just a blip on the screen. It's all, the last 2,000 years, it's all kind of the same.
One continuum. There's been no development of doctrine. It's just been one straight line from those days to today. Well, yes, I mean, that's a controversial point, but yeah, there are a lot of people who believe there has been no change.
And that's why I'm excited about the return of the Tridentine Mass, because I think that will help show just how everything is. It's just the same. Maybe a slight change language, but that's sort of peripheral. It's sort of accidental.
Well, yes, yes. That's, you could definitely call that a Rovism.
You'll have to edit this. Father Jim McDermott used to be with America Magazine. Now he's on the street.
Well, we got some good stuff on the web this week.
Oh, what's going on?
Well, the cover story this week is Cardinal Daniels of Belgium has a story on liturgy 40 years after the Council. And to run with that piece, as we do every week, we have what we call our In These Pages feature, where we feature archive articles from past issues of America. And we have an interview with Cardinal Daniels that we ran in 2001.
Oh, that's great.
And we're also going to feature another good, important article we have this week. It's by Richard Gilardi, a professor at the University of Toledo. And this is about the whole question of the church's relationship with other churches.
Okay.
And along with that, we have a piece that Frank Sullivan, Jesuit, wrote for us back in 2000 about Dominus Iesus, which was that controversial statement regarding the Catholic Church's relationship with other churches.
Hmm.
So we have those two pieces, and we also have an interview this week on our podcast.
Tim, you got so much going on here. What is this?
We have Father John Coleman, a Jesuit, will be speaking with us about his trip to New York.
Father John Coleman, I have to say, as a Jesuit, John Coleman is one of the sort of, it's one of those figures you hear about, and everybody reads Reading the Signs of the Times, one of his books. Every Jesuit scholastic in philosophy, we all had to read that. So to actually have him on the podcast, have him in our house. Great privilege.
Yeah, we really enjoyed talking to him. He is sociologist, teaches at Loyola Marymount University, and he was in town for a big sociological conference in which he presented a paper on the Jesuits and globalization. So he has some interesting things to say about that, so you should stay tuned.
I'll have to listen to the rest of it.
Okay. Well, thanks, Father Jim McDermott. Hope you can join us again next week.
Yeah, thanks. Nice talking to you.
Take care. Hello, this is Tim Reedy for the American Magazine podcast. I'm here this afternoon with Father John Coleman of Loyola Marymount University in Los Angeles. Welcome, Father Coleman.
Thank you.
Thanks for joining us. We're going to talk a little bit about Father Coleman was just here in New York to visit, to take part in a conference of the American Sociological Association, and also help me here, the Association of the Sociology of Religion. You gave a talk at one of these conferences?
Well, at two of them, but...
At both of them, yeah. Okay. Maybe you can talk a little bit about the subject that you spoke about.
Well, I was on a panel that was discussing the topic of religion and globalization. The general theme for the American Sociological Meetings this year was Another World is Possible.
Okay.
And so there were four panelists who were taking case studies of the role of religion addressing issues of globalization.
And your case study was on the Jesuits and globalization.
Yes, it was.
Specifically. So yes. Maybe you could talk a little bit about what you addressed in that talk.
Well, basically, I wanted to pay attention to the fact that there's very strong rhetoric, 20 years running from general congregations and from the general of the society and mm-hmm. from the Secretariat for Social Justice about the centrality of Jesuits through their institutions addressing globalization as a new phenomenon of our time, its ethical implications, its shadow sides, the people who are left out or marginalized by it, as well as the possibilities. And I wanted to ask myself, well, given that high, strong rhetoric that this should be a priority, where are the global networks that Jesuits have, and what difference, if any, are they making or have they made in addressing issues of globalization around the world?
And what did you find?
Well, what I found was that some of the Jesuit networks were more effective than others. One would have expected that the 200 or so Jesuit universities and other tertiary institutions of higher learning was an extraordinary network by which Jesuits would be able to have a concerted address to issues of globalization. But in point of fact, they're so separately incorporated and each go their own way. It doesn't mean that a given university may not have something good on this, but as a network, they're rather ineffective, it seems to me, in having any kind of sense of what the Jesuit stance would be on this issue. The other group I looked at, there are 15... basically social research centers, but not universities. Some of them advocacy social research around the world, a number in Latin America and some in Europe and some in Africa. I looked at these groups to see to what extent they had made some impact in either introducing into larger secular debates about global civil society and issues of human rights, environment, women's issues, and indigenous peoples' issues. They were able to interject some alternative religious perspective and or set of values, or whether in any way they had had some impact, really, on the larger secular debates. And by and large, I'd have to say, with one exception, the Jesuit Center in Zambia, which is quite important, actually, they had not. And then, of course, I looked at what turned out to be, for me, the most important contribution of Jesuits in terms of an issue of globalization, namely the Jesuit Refugee Service around the world, which is roughly 1,000 people serving 450,000 refugees in camps and centers in 50 different countries.
And maybe you can give us a little of the history of the Jesuit Refugee Services. It's about, I think they just celebrated their 25th anniversary.
Last year they celebrated their 25th anniversary. They go into camps. As I say, there's about 75 Jesuits, that is SJs, that work in Jesuit Refugee Services, and most of the rest are volunteers or paid staff members, and nuns and lay volunteers or staff members. And they are in 50 different countries. When they go in the refugee camps, what they've done historically is frequently, given a long Jesuit connection with education, they've dealt with the issue of education, because that obviously refugees have enormously displaced education. And connected with that, sometimes vocational training, so that the refugees will have kind of skills when they go back, or even in the refugee camps, be able to generate some kind of money. But they've done pastoral work as well. But at the global level, they have taken important stances on issues in global society. So the issue of landmines, Jesuits early on, very early on, found themselves after the Khmer Rouge and whatever, and out of the Cambodian thing and whatever, in Cambodia. And they also found themselves very early on in Africa. And we now know that a huge percentage of refugees around the world are now in Africa, in Angola. So that they faced firsthand the issue of landmines. The other thing that they've taken on is, in international law, as you may know, many countries are not abiding by it at all. But, I mean, there are Geneva Conventions about the status of refugees. But these are what would be best called displaced from their own country. But there are really no protocols in international law about large sectors. Sometimes we're talking about millions who are displaced persons in their own country. After all, this is true right now in Iraq. Not everybody's been able to become, quote, a refugee, but they're internal refugees throughout Africa and whatever. So they've been working to try to get international law to be clear on the status. And the third thing, again, they have faced is the uncertain and long-term detention of refugees who come to countries and cannot be sent back because the country they left from doesn't want them, or they don't want to go back, or no other country will receive them, and they can remain in prison forever and never come to trial.
They don't have the same rights even as prisoners in the country.
No, they don't. Actually, one of the things in this country that the Jesuit Refugee Service did was to go into these detention centers and to say, well, no, minimally, they should have the rights that prisoners have in the United States, among other things, something as simple as access to pastoral care.
Yeah, to a priest or a chaplain of some sort.
To a priest or chaplain or an imam, you know.
Of course, yeah.
Right.
Interesting. So this was part of your visit here to New York, and you, of course, are a professor of sociology out in L.A., but this fall you're going to be spending some time in Taiwan, I understand?
Yes, I'm going to there's a Catholic university that the Jesuits are at. They don't run it. It's run, I suppose it would be a bit like Catholic University in the United States. It's run by the bishops of Taiwan. It's called Furen University. And I've been asked to go. There's a thing called the Ladani Lectures. And it's named after a rather distinguished Hungarian Jesuit who for years was a listening post in Hong Kong about what was happening in China and wrote about it. And so I've been asked, and I'm going to be doing a set of sitting in a seminar and then doing a set of 8 lectures on issues of globalization, ethics, and religion.
Okay, very interesting. Right. And what other projects are you working on these days?
Well, this is a slower project because I've just got into it. There's a group called, it's a Los Angeles-based, the University of Southern California-based, the Institute for Advanced Study of Catholicism.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had long connections with that group because I was one of the founding board of that. And they have a research project, it's an international research project, called The Nature of True Wealth. And much of it is being directed by Dan Finn. He's the outgoing president of the Catholic Theological Society.
Oh, right.
And his specialty is ethics and economics. I have a background in ethics and not specifically in economics. But they wanted me to write a paper, it'll be a chapter in the eventual book, on, you know, what insight does sociology bring as economists discuss this? And of course that's obvious to me. I mean, it's very obvious to me. The economists should, if they paid more attention to Adam Smith, they should know it already, that Adam Smith's theory of free trade depended on a underlying set of trust and a culture and ethos of, you know, settled law and trust. So it depended on a communication understanding of a society, and without which you're not going to be able to have, you know,
the market's not going to work.
No, you'll get savage capitalism.
Right. Yeah.
You know, I mean,
interesting. So this is part of a long-term project.
That's part of a long-term project. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Father John Coleman, we appreciate you taking some time, and hopefully next time you're in New York, you can stop by and talk to us.
Well, thank you. It's my delight.
Okay. Take care.
Bye.
Thank you again for joining us for this week's edition of the American Magazine Podcast. Tune in next week when we'll be back again on our weekly schedule, and we'll be talking about the September 10th issue. And we'll have an interview with Father James DiGiacomo, a resident here at America House and a former teacher at Regis High School. We'd like to thank Bill McGarvey again for providing the music for this week's show. You can learn more about him at BillMcGarvey.com. This is Tim Reedy for America Magazine.